Everyone, it's once again another Liberty Hour by Liberty Southwest. This is show number 16. It is June 2nd, 2014. Tonight we have Eric Taylor, Danny Ning, and Lydia Tabbitt, and myself, Kirk Pettis. We will talk about the Minnesota GOP State Convention that happened last weekend and private property and the effects towards liberty. So, why don't we start talking about the GOP convention? I hear it was pretty exciting.
Yeah, you missed out, Kirk. You really did. Where were you?
I was home, wishing I was there.
We could have carpooled you.
Yes, I wanted to go afterwards, but I mean, and then until this weekend happened, then I was kind of happy I didn't have to go. So I'm glad because you guys went because I want to hear all about it. I don't know anything besides bits and pieces. So how many ballots did it go to for gubernatorial endorsement, Senate endorsement? Those are the two main things, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. I think it was.
Jeff Johnson won the gubernatorial endorsement. How many ballots did that take?
I think that one four, isn't that right?
Yeah, that one four.
And, and the Senate race went to 10 and went into 2 o'clock in the Saturday morning. Chris Dahlberg, who is kind of the outsider, dark horse candidate who gave some good speeches, had some decent momentum, and the committee recommended to suspend voting at 2, which for Dahlberg was pretty much the kiss of death, probably, because between that 2 a.m. and 9 a.m. time when the convention reconvened, McFadden managed to get Bachman's endorsement. They were both at 49% after the 8th ballots. Which was the 2 a.m. So it was, there was a vote to, continue going at 2. I certainly voted for that. I don't know if Danny did or not.
Yeah, I voted for it too.
Yeah. Because it was clear, at least to me, that if that didn't take place, that would give them more time, the McFadden side, to strategize and pull in some, bigger names to pull it their direction.
Yeah. Oh, sounds like I missed a party. So what was this whole Marty Seifert hoopla?
Well, he came in, it was like on the 4th ballot, and I think it was Jeff Johnson around 44%, Marty Seifert at like 29 or something like that. And it was getting late. It was like already like, 8:30 already Sunday. Everyone's already just pissed off and just want to go home and
especially Dan.
And all that good stuff. And yeah, I'm hungry. I ran out of M&M's. Yeah, Randy Gilbert M&M's, so I wasn't too happy either. So, and then Marty Seifert, the candidate I was supporting at the time, he came up and said, well, you know what? I just want to say that all the delegates that support me, you can go home now, but I will continue to run the primary. So, obviously, he did not respect the caucus system, this whole system, so everyone got pissed. And everyone was booing and, I was just heckling at him. So, I was sitting in the back with a Marty Seifert t-shirt going up against all these people with the Randy Johnson or Gary Johnson t-shirts.
And Jeff Johnson.
Or Jeff Johnson. Johnson, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's Randy, Gary. Yeah, so that was that. So, and then that was the 3rd ballot. So the 4th ballot, it was like 90% for Jeff Johnson. Jeff Johnson, and then was like less than 10% for Marty Seifert. Then we went home. So
yeah, and kind of some of the controversy around that final ballot is it looked like Marty Seifert was trying to hang the convention, because you have to have at least 50% of the people, 50% of the vote total of the last. So if you go from, let's say, 1,500, you have to have at least 750 on the next ballot.
Right.
And he was basically, he told his people to go home.
Yep.
And, you know, was trying to get Jeff Johnson's people to go home. Keith Downey, who's the chair of the Minnesota GOP, was very upset and came up to the stage and said, this is, he was out of order. This is not what we expected him to do. We ask all delegates to stay, not to leave to go home, which was in direct reaction to what Marty Seifert appeared to be trying to do. So what he was trying to do was to end the convention and no endorsement and go to primary without anyone being endorsed. So it was, you know, some felt it was, you know, it was a manipulative act and was underhanded on his part. He didn't clearly state what his intentions were. So there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of controversy, you know, amongst the delegates who were there.
I didn't know there was that loophole to it. I don't think many people knew about that either. So 50% of the previous ballot, you know, that's, yeah, I was kind of surprised by it. So, I mean, it makes sense now, but yeah.
What, how do you think this affects Liberty for Minnesota, or lack thereof?
From what I observed, you know, within the RLC had a room there. So the Republican Liberty Caucus, which was chaired by Neil Lynch, they had a room. It was pretty comfortable. They had hammocks, bean bags, couches, lazy boy recliners. And, you know, as you went in there, you know, they gave away stickers that you can attach to your badge that said Liberty Caucus. And most of the people, wouldn't you say, Danny, the vast majority were Jeff Johnson supporters?
I did not feel comfortable going there.
Yeah, it was a little bit of an outlier in there.
I was a Marty Seifert t-shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a Marty Seifert t-shirt on, so, and just going in there, there's probably like about 30 people all with like Jeff Johnson t-shirts and those buttons cut on their shirts, and here's this guy with the blue t-shirt that says Seifert on it, and like, oh, whatever, it's a shirt.
Bring in the diversity. Nice, Danny.
Yeah, exactly. Diversity, you know. I mean, I'm Asian already, so bring in more diversity.
That's right. So it certainly appeared, as far as the Liberty Caucus was concerned, that the support was for Johnson.
How many alternates got sat? Was there, I mean, if you were an alternate, did it seem like a lot of them got sat, or were most of the delegates in full attendance?
No, I think Clayton got sat, so I'm pretty sure most people did. Right?
Who did? Sorry.
Von Clayton.
So for anyone that was, you know, that went to the convention, or, you know, like follow through the process, and you still become an alternate, not a full delegate, they were pretty much full. I mean, the alternate still got sat and had voting rights.
Yeah. Yep. If you would have, for example, Kirk, if you would have gone through and you would have been alternate, you'd have been sat.
Yeah. Yeah. Should have went through with it.
That's what Danny and I both fully expected you'd say.
But being there till 2 in the morning on Saturday night and 8 p.m. Sunday, oh, man. I don't know. But But that's, I mean, this is what it's all about, though, and it just sucks that everyone, you know, to me, I'm surprised Seifert's still going to challenge him in the primary.
Yeah, he pretty much tarnished his reputation right there. Unless, I mean...
Was it that you liked about him? Just because he wasn't McFadden, or...?
No, it's just that I know, you know, some people from Pam Myra's family, so, you know, it was kind of between, you know, I thought Seifert, Thompson, and Johnson were all, you know, they were pretty much the same to my eyes, so I there wasn't anyone that kind of stuck out, so it's like, okay, since I kind of, then I have somewhat of a connection with the Myra family, then, you know, I just went with that as the, you know, as my choice, so by like about a hair, so that's basically it. So
what how did I mean, was there still a lot of Ron Paul presence from the delegates from 2 years ago, or was, you know, how did that look? Was there
I'd say
definitely not.
I'd say it was below 10%.
Yeah.
And you know, between 5% and 10%.
So you think people are just giving up with the Republican Party, or?
I don't know. There wasn't a lot of people, a lot of Liberty people there. That's for sure.
I don't know. The Republican Party sure seems to be utilizing more and more government, not going away from it. So,
sounded like Lydia had something to say.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just surprised that it was that few.
Wouldn't you say that's accurate, Danny?
Yeah, that's definitely accurate. I mean, in Carver County, I can't really identify
the only Liberty guy.
Person besides myself. Yep. Frank Long, I'm not sure if he's...
No, he's not.
He's probably closest. There's another person, I think she's more Liberty, but I forget what her name was. But yeah... It's definitely much, much lower Liberty people as compared to 2012. Sorry. So,
what percentage of the delegates would you say were Tea Party affiliated?
Oh, pretty much the rest. Everyone else.
Yeah, Tea Party is pretty strong there.
Well, but the Tea Party is not going to... Was the Tea Party? I mean, to me, the Tea Party is not enough to have the Senate race be that close. Or am I?
Yeah,
they split. I don't know.
Yeah, I would say that if I were to guess, probably 20 to 25% were Tea Party. So 5 to 10%, probably closer to 5 or Liberty, and 20 to 25% were Tea Party. You know, so,
you know, how did Julianne Ortman do in the first ballot?
Not so good. The first ballot was pretty split, though.
She was third, yeah?
Yeah.
Which was a surprise, though. I thought she would be first. I thought it would be Julianne Ortman, and then second place would be McFadden, and then... third place would either be Dahlberg or Jim Abler, but yeah, Ortman was third place, so
yeah, and I was kind of surprised. I was pretty happy about that because I was, you know, I made my mind up a while ago that I was going to support Chris Dahlberg, and I thought he was going to be pretty far down, and he was on top, and he had, you know, a lot of support. He was seen as the Liberty conservative choice outsider, you know, type of candidate who, you know, comes from the Iron Range, which is predominantly DFL, and, you know, would have a good chance of appealing to that, you know, segment. It's just his speech was really good. And I think that, you know, that helped him out even more. And wouldn't you say, Danny, he had significant momentum for a while.
Yeah, he did. I think the highest highest percent of votes for Dahlberg was over like 40, around 40%, pretty consistently, but never really break through above that threshold.
But he, did you guys hear anything about the Democrat convention?
Well, the big thing that I heard about that was the PolyMet split.
Yeah, that's what I read in the paper today about that, and that they never even brought. It was supposed to be voted on, but they shelved it so they wouldn't create the controversy and the division and try and unify the party, which I don't think it did. But I don't know. I just think there's a lot of discontent with both political parties out there, and I just really wish we had some good third-party candidates in a way that really shake things up and try and get the government out of our hairs, this overreach and overregulation and just general government control over our day-to-day lives is really stretching and wearing people thin, and it's, I think the resentment's growing.
You know, it's interesting how Scott Honor wasn't even at the Republican convention. He chose to go to Duluth to speak to PolyMet, you know, various issues, and kind of ties into, I don't even know if we want to touch on this. This has been a topic of conversation within the Liberty Circle over the last day or so. There's been an individual who supported him, who's previously thought to be, you know, a decent Liberty guy.
So Hosley, you're talking about?
I'm talking about Kurt Bills.
Oh, Kurt Bills. Oh, never mind.
Yeah, we saw. Remember, Danny made some comments about who he is supporting when we were at the convention. There's been some conversation on that over the last day or so, but so.
Yeah, let's spill the beans.
I was really surprised how he endorsed McFadden and he endorsed Scott Honor. Just total establishment party, you know, GOP parties. Total 180 from Liberty. It was just, I don't know.
Well, yeah, it just shows that once you start getting involved, you kind of get cornered into the establishment. And it's hard to get away from. And that's why I just think people are just resentful for the two-party system. And it's really becoming a broken system in my personal beliefs. But.
Well, what even pissed me off more was that, as for the Senate race was, you know, as ballots kept on going, you know, people that was supporting Dahlberg was slowly moving to McFadden. It's like I didn't understand that. I don't understand why. Like, and Eric, you can speak more about this because in Hennepin County, you were telling me your frustrations on everyone supporting McFadden just because simply he has the money. He has the money.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and to me, I think candidate would have been Dahlgren from being from the Iron Range, and he would really be able to sink a nail through the plank that the Democrats have up in the northern Minnesota, that it would really split the party up there right now when it's the weakest, and actually bring further discussion and debate besides this rigid follow to either side of the party, depending on what part of or what county you're in Minnesota is kind of essentially how it is. But
yeah, it was Danny and I participated in a lot of conversation as it got later into the evening on Friday and early Saturday morning, where we're just pounded on for not understanding that, not supporting Mike McFadden, you're basically going against any path to Republican victory. I mean, how many times did we have that conversation, Danny?
I don't know, countless.
Yeah. It was, I was so upset after a while. Like, the debating that occurred was pretty heated, and there was no relenting on, you know, on either side, where, you know, the rational justification from the McFadden side was, how can you win without money? And when, you know, when countering with, you know, basically what you're talking about is the, you know, the lesser of two evils, a Democrat light type candidate and McFadden, the common answer was, so what? At least it's not, you know, at least it's not a Democrat or it's not Franken. When, you know, you can look at it, there's not a huge difference between the two. And there was.
Do you think McFadden would have voted for Obamacare?
No.
I mean, to me, that's fairly significant.
Well, wasn't McFadden for more gun control, and now he's not? I thought McFadden was the guy that was kind of for more gun legislation.
Yeah, that's correct. I heard that.
Back to now, all the mailings I've gotten from him have been all saying the opposite, but.
Yeah, I was going to say, the message out of the McFadden campaign that I saw was that he had reconsidered his position on that, for whatever that's worth. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe, I wasn't there, I haven't been following it that closely, but that was the message out of the McFadden campaign that I saw.
Well, essentially, we're never going to get a true leader out of Minnesota anyways. When's the last time we had a strong senator from Minnesota?
That's the question I have, though, is that if the race is unwinnable, or you have to have X amount of money to win, then who cares who the candidate is, almost, you know? Whoever, give it to McFadden, have him fund it himself, and just, all the people that are actually conservative or liberty-minded focus their attention and resources on the gubernatorial race. I don't know. That's sort of the playing devil's advocate, I guess.
Yeah, and I don't see any... the Republican Party going away, I mean, coming back to less government intervention. They want more and more of this whole fear-mongering of terrorism and just general war on everything, war on drugs.
That's actually a good question. I'm assuming this came up because it's a U.S. Senate endorsement. What was McFadden's position on foreign policy?
I don't recall any conversation on that at all. Do you, Danny?
Yeah, no, I don't.
Because that only, like, completely defined Kurt Bill's endorsement, if you recall.
Mm-hmm. I don't recall any conversation or statements on that whatsoever.
Because for me, that's a really big deal. Because, yeah, to me, that's, if you're talking about a John McCain Republican versus, like, I don't know, a reasonably, like, not hawkish establishment Republican that would vote for, like, Obamacare, or would not vote for Obamacare, you know, a kind of generic establishment Republican, for me, that's a fairly significant difference between sort of a generic Republican and a Peter King, John McCain Republican. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Well, since we talked about Kurt Bills, do you think Kurt Bills just chose to be on the liberty aspect just to ride Ron Paul's wave?
Are we going there? Are we having
a we don't have to go there.
I have fairly strong opinions about this, but I don't know how much of it I want to be recorded on the podcast. Sure. But if you want to go there, we can go there. I can tell you my opinions.
Well, are you ever going to be a delegate again, Lydia?
In Minnesota, probably not for a long time, if ever.
You might not ever have to worry about it then.
Yeah.
Well, I know. I know. I don't know. My opinion is that there's, I don't know. I think this whole thing that's going on Facebook with Kurt Bills, I think
it's a lot more complicated than people are making it out to be. I think you kind of have to, you know, it's one thing to stand for principle, but you also have to understand context. And I think there's a lot of people that are blind to the context on some of these things, whether or not, I don't know. I have opinions on it, but I don't know if we want to talk about it or if we want to move on to other things.
No, we can talk about it because I think some have said it's almost a Rand Paul type of philosophy as far as what he's doing.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if to me, if you're a Tea Party person and you're supporting Rand Paul in 2016, to me, this is that on a smaller scale, maybe a little bit more extreme. To me, the biggest issue is the Scott Honor endorsement personally. And I think that to me, that's the biggest.
How so?
Well, Scott Honor has completely disregarded the endorsement process. You know, he didn't even show up. I mean, I don't know. McFadden.
He was at the DFL convention.
Yeah, exactly. Outside. He was at the DFL convention. And McFadden, he's probably a flip-flopper. I don't know what he stands for. But I think with enough harassing and hassle can be persuaded or at least forced to be on the conservative side if there was enough outrage. I think Scott Honor on the issues in principle is committed to non-conservative, non-liberty focused ideas or positions on issues.
So is Honor going to be running in the primary?
Yes.
Yes.
Against McFadden then?
No. It's Johnson. McFadden's running for Senate.
Yeah, so Honor's running for governor then against Johnson.
Yes. Okay. So he'd be against
is
Johnson.
Is anyone
so
going to challenge McFadden in the primary?
Well. No, it'd be Kurt Zellers, Jeff Johnson, and Scott Honor, the gubernatorial side, and most likely just McFadden, potentially Ortman.
Oh, but pretty Seifert.
Jim Abler Mark might Seifert. Run in the primary against
what?
McFadden.
These guys
are going to run.
you should,
Danny, you need to talk about Abler's speech a little bit. Give it the Danny breakdown.
Please do. Yes.
Oh, you guys should have been there. I just felt so bad for the guy. He was like playing some Hawaiian music in the background, trying to get people to dance and all that. So, and then, you know, it's his time to turn to speak. He has like all his followers behind him with the signs and the Jim Abler t-shirts and cheering and things like that with that, you know, happy Hawaiian dance music. Then you see him kind of rolling to the stage, kind of doing his dance and trying to do the roof type of thing, and you know,
raise
hey, everyone, get up your seat and
raise
dance.
The roof.
and he's like, woo, woo, and it's just complete silence in the crowd, and oh, I feel bad for the guy.
Well, is Abler's the one with the large family presence behind him, right?
I was gonna say the people behind him was like what the city of Anoka, and that's about it.
Wasn't it all of his family?
I wouldn't be surprised. Who knows?
His Please wife... count that's on video somewhere. I'd really love to see that, actually.
It was really, really funny because he was trying to, like, work up the crowd. He was up on the stage raising the roof, you know, bringing his hands up in the air, and there was absolutely no response
no reaction.
Whatsoever.
You know, I gave Jim Abler the same amount of opportunity as all the other candidates back during the State Central. But then I found out he was influential on the Viking Stadium and on daycare unionization. And after that, I just kind of found the whole campaign kind of funny, I have to say. So, I mean, God bless him for trying, but I don't know. I would love to see a videotape of that. If anyone gets a hold of it, please send it to me.
Well, you're in Minnesota and you do a Hawaiian theme and try raising the roof. Oh my God.
Kirk, if you run for Chan City Council again, I think that might be something to consider.
Yes.
Or Chaska.
Chaska,
no.
here are two points I kind of want to raise as well with this whole process. I think one of the reasons why the GOP wanted to endorse, especially the establishment party wanted to endorse McFadden on the Senate side and Scott Honor on the government side, gubernatorial side, is because, A, in my opinion, 2 years ago, we had the Ron Paulers with the ideology of taking over the government, taking over the United States and all that. We have ideas, but then after we got Kurt Phils elected, poof, there was nothing. You know, he did not get the funding he needed. He did not get the advertisement, the name recognition, and basically no one knew about him. I mean, he was going up against Amy Klobuchar, which was, she has a huge war chest. I forget how much money she had at the time, but, you know, go up against Kurt Phils, we didn't have any money. So, and I think now that we wanted to, the GOP establishment wanted to get someone who has the money, and they think that with the money, we can go up against, go up against Al Franken. And two, back then, the GOP was broke. We were $2 million in debt. So we couldn't fund any candidates. And, you know, I think part of the reason why we're trying to get McFadden in and Scott Honor in is because, you know, that way the GOP does not have to, expend as many resources as they should, you know, to help them with their campaigns. So ever since Keith Downey became the chair, I think our budget's been better now. I think we're still like about $1 million in deficit. But I think those are like some of the two reasons why we've been trying to focus on getting these crappy candidates.
Well, one little correction, Dad. You said that we were trying to take over the government. We were just trying to take over the Republican Party, and us Liberty people, we were following the rules of the game to try and get our people endorsed, which we got Kurt Phils endorsed, and it was, things just didn't pan out. But we did what we had to do, and then no one else backed it. And then now, yeah, exactly. Now they say, oh, without the money. But it's like, what? Do you want our politicians to be sellouts to, selling favors for large contributions or what? I mean, it's if that's how the establishment wants to run itself, then maybe that's all the furthermore reason why the whole system's broken.
Well, and to be fair, we do want to take over the government, right? That's the joke. Libertarians want to take over the government and leave people.
Yes.
Take it over and leave
you alone. We'd love to take it over and leave you alone.
Exactly.
Common law. Get rid of all this regulation, restrictions, government by force.
So that to me is the question, and I don't really know. I think that's really the question is it possible to be effective and to be successful in advancing the liberty movement without significant funds or without at least working with or compromising with funded establishment candidates?
Well, maybe we just need to do better education and teach people that we don't need the government to be above us, that the government was formed by the people, for the people, with the people above government. Now we created the government. Now the government has created us as citizens, and now we are below the government as citizen slaves. And I don't think people realize the power we have, and it's a shame, and we're kind of cornered into this two-party system, and I think a lot of this private property talk can go into it and how this is really affecting our lives.
Well, and this is just one more thing I'll add is so many people in like really of all different, you know, ages, genders, socioeconomic, you know, all walks of life. So many different people are dependent on the government for something. And it's really hard to convince those people fully of the liberty message because they all have their own corner of the government that they're just not willing to give up. And that's really, I don't really know how that's addressed, I guess.
Yeah, the great American experiment has been usurped. It's kind of, it's a sad deal and
sorry.
By was, more and more government intervention, but.
Yeah, no, it was interesting. The other day I was on the bus back to Madison, and we were driving through downtown Minneapolis, and I was looking out the window and it was like, I could count basically on each block at least one thing that was funded or depended on government, whether it was, you know, light rail, whether it was, you know, government buildings, whether it was transit, you know, like it was just like, you know, it's just, there's so many areas and so many different things and increasing more and more each day that are dependent on government funding and government, growth basically. And I don't know how that's reversed. And I think that's really the question we're all trying to answer.
How about I answer What is Liberty by Frederick Bastiat?
That sounds good to me. Go for it.
It's out of the book The Law. What is liberty? It is the instinctive struggle of all people towards liberty. And what is this liberty? Whose very name makes the heartbeat faster and shakes the world? Is it not the union of all liberties, liberty of consciousness, of education, of association, of the press, of travel, of labor, of trade? In short, is not liberty the freedom of every person to make full use of his faculties so long as he does not harm other persons while doing so? Is not liberty the destruction of all despotism, including, of course, legal despotism? Finally, is not liberty the restricting of the law only to its rational sphere of organizing the right of the individual to lawful self-defense of punishing injustice? And to me, the whole concept of liberty arose from the concept of private property. The fact that we labor and the fruits of our labor we acquire, and in doing so, you acquire private property. But when you have a despotism or some other top-down structure, even socialism, that takes your private property and considers it more trying to create more equality, we needed a structure of government that protects the private property, that promotes justice, and harms the injustice, which would be, you know, harming another person. So, but now, just like you were talking about, Lydia, the government is so entrenched with, you know, social programs and promoting equality that we've gone so far away from true justice and promoting liberty and promoting private property rights that is there such a thing as true private property anymore?
Are we moving towards private property? Is that what's going on?
No.
I had one thing before moving to private property, and I think everyone here probably has some pretty interesting opinions on this. And it's getting back to, and I, so the whole Kurt Bills supporting Scott Unner and Mike McFadden, who I think, you know, probably all of us would agree would be a very poor choice as far as individuals to support.
Ideologically, yes.
Not to say that I don't fully support Mike McFadden as the endorsed candidate, but for U.S. Senate. There's been some conversation about Kurt Bills and what he's doing there. And one of the more interesting perspectives that I've come across is it a bad idea for someone who may believe in liberty to support and voice the liberty perspective towards more what would be viewed as establishment candidates. You know, does it make sense to, you know, support and kind of push the Liberty message forward in a more of a incremental type of way? You know, say, I support you, but this is what I would like you to do. I'd like you to, you know, speak to free market economics, individual liberty, a non-interventionist foreign policy, and all the time saying, yeah, I support you. Go forward. Is that a strategy worth pursuing, or, you know, is it not?
Well, this is, I guess, the way I would present that would be to say, this is what we stand for. We support you as the most electable or most likely to win and represent a portion of these things that we stand for. Because that way you're not, I don't know, that way you're not compromising what you stand for. You're presenting it in terms of, this is what we stand for. We expect you to do the same kind of thing.
And there,
if that makes any sense, I don't know.
Well, yeah. And there, you know, there potentially is value in that.
I see the value. I don't know if it will get us anywhere, because my whole thing is, if the true essence of liberty is the lack of government intervention. And I just don't see the two-party system going in that direction, or if it ever can anymore.
Well, and I would agree with you there, Kirk. I think I frequently am of the frustration that, you know, at the end of the day, the primary goal of the Republican Party is to elect Republicans. It's not necessarily a principled thing. It's not necessarily an ideological thing. I mean, you could argue there's the party platform, and to whatever extent that's actually adhered to or is of value, I mean, people have their own opinions. But at the end of the day, the primary goal of the Republican Party is to have as many elected Republicans in office.
And maybe we need to destroy the caucus system to do that and just go with the primary system.
You think so? Okay, here's the argument. Sorry, I'm just being a real contrarian. If I'm doing this too much, please let me know. But I mean, the argument, right, with going to a primary system is that the highest funded candidate is maybe not necessarily always going to be most successful, but they're sure going to have an advantage in getting their message out there. Whereas with a caucus system, you have a slightly more even playing field.
Except it didn't work out this time. With the caucus system, we had the person with the most money, with the least ideological soundness, winning the endorsement.
Yeah, that's very true.
So, and I think we need, and, you know, I think by having the caucus system crumble might even help the Liberty cause more. It just, you know,
Danny,
we already know
the
that.
Destroyer.
What's that?
Danny the Destroyer.
And here's the, okay, I'm going to say this, and here's the thing. I'm really tempted to support Scott Honor in the primary.
Danny, what are you saying?
Come on, Danny.
just so that we can prove that this caucus, this whole spiel that we've gone through this weekend was a total joke. And, you know, yeah, endorsing a candidate didn't matter. It really didn't matter.
Okay.
You know, I just want to prove that.
Danny, you're bitter. You're bitter
I'm
about
bitter.
Seifert.
Yes, I know. I mean, yeah. Okay, here's the thing. Here, listen to me right here, right now. I mean, okay. I text this, Eric, so you probably know what I'm saying right now.
Yep.
We endorsed McFadden. We know that this guy is going to run to the primary. And all these people are like, oh, you know what, we think McFadden's going to win because, you know, he has the most money, yada, yada, yada. And they all know, and we all knew that he's running in the primary regardless. So then we get to the governor's race, and then Marty Seifert comes out and say, I'm going to be running in the primary. Everyone starts booing him and starts... You guys know where I'm going with this, right?
No,
now.
I get what
we're
you're
all freaking hypocrites. I just can't believe that just happened right there. We endorse McFadden, who is running in the who would run in the primary if he lost, and yet we were just heckling Seifert because he was running the primary. So that case and that, you know, I get it.
Did you tear off your shirt in disgust, Danny? Oh, this blue shirt. Oh.
So in that sense, I just want to vote for either. I'm tempted to like just vote
Zellers
for
or Otter
or Zellers. You know, those
Come
guys
on,
who
Daddy.
Didn't even show up just to show how, you know, how this caucus system is just a waste of time. I understand the caucus, the ideology of, you know, it's a great even playing field and all that, but it didn't work. And
well, it's not going to work every time. I mean, we're a republic, and the republic is supposed to have delegates and whatnot, and the primary just reeks too much of a democracy, in my opinion, where a minority of people that, you know, are active can actually have major sway, far more inside a caucus system or primary, you know, which i.e. a republic in a sense.
No, I understand that. People who pay more attention to, you know, what's going on with politics and things like that, these are the people who should be the ones who participate, you know.
That's what I said, though, 2 years ago, that this is we kicked their butt 2 years ago, and we shouldn't have. And we're going to get cream. I expected us to get cream this time around just because. And none of the Liberty people even showed up in the first place. But we showed that, you know what, you can't be lazy. You got to go out there and do a lot more legwork than what they're, you know, the Republicans got fat and lazy and didn't go out there and do the work that needed to be done to get the support out there. Maybe the support just doesn't even exist. I don't even know. But, you know, a lot of us Liberty people came up, and we were the irate minority that swung the election, you know, the conventions in our favor. So McFadden definitely has been doing a lot more legwork. You know, Ortman has been doing a lot of legwork. I think a lot of them have, you know, it's been – I guess I wasn't at the convention, but it just seemed like there was a lot more effort put into this time around than there was even 2 years ago for the Senate race.
Okay, can I throw in my 2 cents?
Yes, you can.
Okay, thanks. Okay, first of all, Danny, I don't know what you're talking about supporting Scott Honor in the primary. I'm just going to say, like, I would like for you to go to an RLC event wearing a Scott Honor t-shirt and then respond back on how that goes for you.
Yeah, there weren't. Danny was the only one with a Seifert shirt on.
Yeah, and like, to me, Seifert, like, his message is at least semi-conservative. I'd really like to just see how that would pan out. With a Scott Honor t-shirt.
The only reason why I would ever think about supporting Scott Honor is to prove all these freaking hypocrites.
Destroyer. Danny the Destroyer.
Danny, I 100% understand where you're coming from with that in saying that people who say, oh, you have to support McFadden, you have to support McFadden because he has the money, but then they get all upset on people who, you know, Seifert for running a primary and get all upset.
Yeah, the only reason why they're upset with them is because we were all tired. We wanted to go home, and he did it at the wrong time. I get that. But still, by the principle basis of, you know, electing the candidates, that's hypocrisy right there.
Well, it just showed that Seifert wasn't prepared to be a politician as good as he should have been anyways. He shouldn't have been the person. You shouldn't have had the endorsement in the first place then.
That's fair.
Seifert had the speech that Seifert threw out, the last speech, to me appeared to be something that he had ready to go.
It was his,
wouldn't you agree, Danny?
Yeah, it was his last backup plan, I believe. Yeah. So
to hang the convention, basically. So there was no naivete or anything along those lines. It was a calculated political speech in order to reach a goal, which in his case was to hang the convention, go to primary, and win primary. So
talk about wasting people's time.
Well, that's why people were so upset.
Right.
That's what, you know, when kind of processing what he did, that's why, you know, quite a few people were just like, you know, this is a calculated process that is unfair to quite a few people.
Right.
How was there any good resolutions to the platform?
No, there wasn't much conversation around that.
What was the attitude towards medical marijuana?
I don't recall. Do you recall, Danny?
I know Liberty, Minnesota.
Say no.
Well, they had a booth. Yeah, they had a booth there, and they had their brownies.
Yeah, and I saw that.
Yeah, and they had their scorecards and there was that. But as far as, you know, conversation around the, I don't think I discussed that one time. Did you, Danny? Did you have a conversation about medical marijuana?
No, I did not. I was not in the room.
Yeah.
I was supporting Seifert at the time.
Yeah. I will say this, though. Who knows? Maybe it was just the heat of the moment. Seifert might have overreacted, but...
No, that was planned.
It probably was more of a political move, calculated that. Yeah. In the end, it was completely the wrong move.
Well, I think his strategy now is to focusing his campaign outside of the people who participated at that convention. So those people who are more independent, who aren't really affiliated with the GOP, I think that's what he's going to tailor more towards to now.
Well, how about this? I mean, so... We were talking about money. Do you really get the aspect that money is really what people are looking for then versus the topics that people brought up and, you know, what their personal platform was?
Well, Mark, that's how Mark Dayton became governor. I mean, he was like ousted. He wasn't endorsed by the Democratic Party. No. He was actually ousted by the Democratic Party. He ran the primary and... That's an argument right there. I mean, I didn't know what.
Well,
the
I'm just talking about. I mean, when you think of a convention, you're going to go there to hear the politicians speak and to hear their present their ideas and what they stand for, and like, oh, this is the guy I want to get behind, or is it, oh, this guy I can make the money show up, I can, you know. Have that bring this influence in, and is that the tone that you see people are looking for then, or?
I think that's, I don't know, what do you think, Eric? That's kind of what I got out of. It's all about the money.
Well, on the Senate side, that's what I got, but not as much on the gubernatorial side. I didn't talk a lot. I didn't have many conversations with people who supported Honor. To be honest.
Well, he wasn't there, so.
Yeah.
I mean, candidates for the governor's side, I mean, they, then none of them have that much money compared to Honor.
Right. Yeah, so that wasn't even much of a conversation. But on the Senate side, that was, at least for the most part, the people that I spoke with are like, how are you going to win without any money? Dahlberg has no money. you know, McFadden has the money. He has the connections. He can raise it. He can, you know, you need it to win. You can't win without any money. But there wasn't that type of conversation on the gubernatorial side, and honor really wasn't even touched upon in most of the conversations that I had. So,
well, I just think that it's sad what the Republican Party is turning into. It's just has such a lack of faith in people, in my opinion, these days. That where, yeah, it's all right. We need this to be this way, and if you know, to stand on the principle. If you didn't like what Dahlberg was because of his principle, I could see it that. But oh, just because he's not going to have the money,
no, and
shows
people,
a lack of
people,
faith in the community and the Republican Party at large, and the people of Minnesota, in my opinion. But
okay, hold on though. If you're going to run for the United States Senate, and I know this because I worked on the Kurt Bills campaign. If you're going to run for the United States Senate and you don't have any money, you have to have an enormous network of volunteers and grassroots activists. And I don't know that Chris Dahlberg would have had the amount of grassroots activists to compensate for his lack of funds. It absolutely upsets me to no end the amount of money in politics and that it requires $1 million to run for the U.S. Senate. It infuriates me all the time. But I think that it's sort of a political reality. Now, whether or not it can be changed or not, I don't know if that's even possible. But I do know that if you're going to run for the United States Senate, money is at least currently an unfortunate requirement.
Yeah. I don't know. My philosophy is running a dollar campaign. If you can get a dollar from every single person, you go out there and stand for your principles and you talk to as many people as you can. You get a dollar from everyone, you will get the votes and the numbers and the money to win.
And
that's not from the large amount, you know, the big donors. And to me, the big donors separate from the legwork that you got to do.
I agree, but do you think that Dahlberg had the network or the resources of people that would be enough to actually get his message across the entire state of Minnesota? We're not just talking Minneapolis. We're not just talking the metro. We're talking the entire state of Minnesota. Do you think he would have had the network of grassroots activists that were willing to put in the time to do that?
That was a common argument that I heard.
Well, maybe if
the
endorsement actually had a little weight behind it, and if, you know, the Republicans actually respected the endorsement process, then that would be, you know, then people would actually go out there and help to endorse. I mean, there's delegates all across the state. If everyone just found one other person to help them.
Okay. And then this brings me back to Kurt Bills. And Kurt Bills was the endorsed candidate. There were, and this is just my own interpretation. This is kind of my own speculation. I haven't actually talked to Kurt Bills about this. I'd kind of like to know his perspective, but to me, it seemed like Kurt Bills in 2012 was endorsed. There were a lot of people that helped him get that endorsement. And I think Kurt Bills, wrong or right, I think understandably presumed that those people that helped him to earn the endorsement for the Republican Party would help him see his campaign through November to at least formulate some sort of attack against Amy Klobuchar. And then based on various disagreements with Kurt Bills or his campaign, a lot of people, and I'm not just talking like one or two, I'm talking a great majority of the people, Ron Paul delegates and people that had worked to get Kurt Bills the endorsement, fell off the face of the earth. And this is just a reality. And I think that explains a lot in terms of when I was talking earlier about context. I'll be the first one to say that, and you could ask any of the Yallers, that when I found out that Kurt had endorsed Scott Honor, I was hugely upset. But I get it. That's what I'm talking about when I say context. Kurt Bills, in my opinion, presumed there were a lot of people that got him that Republican endorsement that was supposedly so important, and then they didn't help him. He didn't have the grassroots effort and was left pretty much alone to dry, like, hanging out to dry with no funds on his own to And so that's my own personal perspective. And granted, I don't know everything that went on in the Kurt Bills campaign or why some people didn't support him. But I think that's key in understanding the context of the whole thing, at least in my opinion.
But what if Kurt Bills exposed more on how the dysfunction of the Republican Party and how they don't stand for that and whatnot, and actually challenge the way people have perceived the Republican Party? Is like, is this really what we're fighting for? Why I go and check names by the R or whatnot in the ballot? That it could be a martyr in a way, that if you knew he was going to lose, why even go down the certain manner, I guess. But like, what weight does Kurt Bills endorsing honor have then? If Kurt Bills, if his supporters are turned off by his endorsement of honor, what weight does it have in the first place? Why even do it?
No,
why endorse honor in the first place? It doesn't make sense.
No. Can I? Okay, yeah, I agree. It's a mistake, and this will bring me to my other point, which is that we as the Liberty Movement are not the establishment, right? We want to change the establishment. We want to kind of bring in our own liberty individuals, or at least replace what we consider to be establishment Republicans, or move them in a liberty direction. And I think if that's what our goal is, we also have to run, you know, liberty-minded candidates eventually, right? And that means that probably these candidates are going to be political outsiders or people with very little experience that are naive and inexperienced when it comes to the political process. And I think that was another component with Kurt Bills, is that, you know, in a lot of ways, Kurt Bills, I mean, he's a high school economics teacher. He's not someone that has been in party politics for 15 years. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's an outsider in a lot of ways, and I think, you know, in that regard, he's human. We're all human. We're going to make mistakes. And I think Kurt Bills made some mistakes, you know, some things within, you know, his campaign or personnel or strategy. And then even now with some of his endorsements, I think, you know, we're all human. We're all going to make mistakes. And I think in the Liberty Movement, especially, we'll have people that are inexperienced. They're going to make mistakes and run for office and do things that some liberty-minded people are going to disagree with. And I think we do ourselves a lot of harm by just immediately dismissing them as opposed to having some sort of dialogue or conversation articulating our frustrations, I guess.
Yeah, I'm not.
I think that's well stated.
Completely.
Lydia, for what it's worth.
Oh, yeah, it was very well said. But I'm not completely degrading Kurt Bills. I just think that Kurt Bills exposed how condensating or just how cheap the Republican Party was, you know, to the liberty aspect and true conservatism and not being full out full out war throughout the world, being the police state of the world. And it's it just exposed how they, once Kurt Bills won the endorsement, the establishment, the Republican Party, just pretty much went away. They wanted him gone, and that had to sting. That had to, you know, so Kurt Bills tried to, you know, gain favor with them, but it lost favor at the others gaining the liberty momentum in the process, in my opinion. And it just
I would also,
because when you hear Kurt Bills speak, he blew everyone away. I mean, even people that didn't like him at first, once they heard him speak, were just blown away. Like, oh, this is finally a great guy we got running. But because the Republican Party in Minnesota abandoned him, his message never fully got out there. And it wasn't the lack of money. It was the lack of internal support, in my opinion.
And well, just to be fair, I don't know if I fully agree that, you know, when Kurt Bills was indoors, that we just totally got away from him and not wanting to support him. I think it's just our party was broke at the time. We had
that too, for sure. That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. we couldn't fund him because we were like $2 million in debt. We were, the GOP was about to face eviction from their office because we couldn't pay rent. So quite the irony. We're all about fiscal for conservatism, and yet we can't even balance our own budget. So I think partially that could have an impact on why, you know, Bills couldn't get the funding he needed because we're just broke.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a very good point.
I don't know. I just think that there was the powers that be purposely shunned Kurt Bills, and that had a lot of weight behind it. And from the true insiders that he's not a part of the game and he cannot win. Just kind of how like Ron Paul. Ron Paul could not be the endorsed Republican for president.
Well, and I think...
And it would have been the same kind of thing if Ron Paul ended up being endorsed.
Yeah. But I think I'm playing a lot of devil's advocate for whatever reason on this podcast. I think if you were to ask anyone that was, you know, in the Republican Party establishment at that time, I think the response you would get would be something along the lines of, okay, you know, congratulations, Ron Paul campaign. You turned out the numbers. You worked really hard. You got your activists out and you took over the party. Now it's your candidate. Do your thing. You know, it's like, we'd had nothing to do with this. This is your candidate. Do your thing. And whether or not that's right or wrong, or whether or not, you know, these people who preach party unity and all that, you know, whether or not that's hypocritical and whatnot, and whether or not they actually supported Kurt Bills to the best of their ability, we could have that discussion. But I think if you were to ask someone that was a, you know, party establishment, you know, Republican Party, traditional Republican in 2012, about the Kurt Bills campaign, I think from some people that would be the response that you would get.
And you could argue that some decisions that the Bills campaign made as far as more senior staffing was concerned really disillusioned a lot of the liberty activists and individuals who would have given to the campaign, right?
Oh, absolutely. And that's sort of, I have my own opinions on that. I could go on all day long, but, I think that's what I'm talking about when I say that when we're running inexperienced or political outsiders, they're going to make mistakes possibly like that. And, you know, that's just something we're going to have to deal with. And if there were some mistakes like that, I certainly think there were. I don't know. I think that's something we just as a liberty movement have to expect and have to have conversations about, I guess.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Is that the closing music here in the background?
It is. It is. We're
at Well, sorry, Kirk, we couldn't talk about private property.
We had like a little private property intermission there.
I got usurped. I can take it. But here, I got one more quote for you from Basquiat as well. And he was French, and this is from early 1800s. And let me just read what he wrote here as one of his quotes. In a country like the United States, where the right to property is placed above the law, where the sole function of the public police force is to safeguard this natural right, each person can, in full confidence, dedicate his capital and his labor to production. He does not have to fear that his plans and calculations will be upset from one instance to another by the legislator. How different we live in the United States today. He would never have a quote like that anymore. Kind of ties in exactly what we're talking about. That is the legislator really where we can fight for liberty? That it can be granted or taken away? These are from the founding of the country. These are natural rights from God per se, and they're in us. They can't be taken away. Why do we allow a government to dictate what we can and cannot do when we don't harm anyone? And it's our legislator, our judicial, the executive branch, they're not supposed to have that control over us, and yet we are fighting to gain influence in the two-party system to try and restore that when it's a losing battle because it shouldn't ever be that way in the first place. But that's why he was admiring the United States in the early 1800s. And it wasn't until the mid-1800s that everything changed. But for the most part, it was changing all the time. But
it's tough over there during his time in France. There's a lot of things going on.
Well, it's even tougher now in a way, too. But, yeah, it was tough then, too. Yes, you're right.
Wrap it up, Kirk.
Well, I hope this was exciting for everyone that has not been a part of a convention before, and maybe this got you a little excited to take part next time, but or maybe not, going to 2 a.m., but it's definitely a fun process, and it's been a lot of inside baseball talk tonight, but hopefully there was some insight gleaned, and I think next week we will talk a little more about private property and maybe a little about common law and sovereignty, maybe. We'll find out. Till next week, good evening and good night.
Good night.